This content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion advised.
That thing wasn't human, but it didn't seem like a demon either. A demon would feel evil. This thing felt empty. It was hostile towards us, but it wasn't evil. It just had no good or evil intent.
As I got closer to the patch of trees, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I knew I was not alone. I broke into a sprint again, feeling like I was running for my life.
From Killer Podcasts, true tales of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. This is Disturbed. Hello, and welcome back to the show. This week, we're bringing you four stories that will leave you speechless. So sit back, listen closely, and dive into the horror. First, a story narrated by Brian Jeffords from Reddit user Unstoppably Stupid. Trust your instincts, or it might be the last mistake you ever make.
While I was young, I lived at the end of a dead-end street. Directly across the road from my house was an old man that lived with his sister. They had inherited the house from their parents. Beside their house was a cornfield, and behind it, a larger one. And on the other side of that field were the closest convenience store and, well, many friends of mine. The old man was nice enough to allow us to cross through his lawn to get to the field instead of having to walk all the way up the road and then backtrack down the main road. It's also important to this story to point out that there was a patch of trees between the two different fields. It was not very big, maybe 15 feet deep, but it ran the entire length of both fields, and we'd have to walk through it when taking this shortcut. It is also important to point out that there was a large dilapidated barn on the edge of the property line, belonged to whoever owned the cornfield. I ended up getting a job at that convenience store when I turned 14. I worked from 7 until 9 every night, stocking the coolers and sorting out the bottle returns by vendor. Then, in the dark, I'd walk home through the fields. Even in the summer, it was pitch black out by the time I got off work. I never had a good feeling when I would walk past the barn. It always felt as if something were watching me. My skin would crawl just being near it. But the shortcut saved me 20 minutes of walking, so I always used it. One winter night, around 6:30, I was walking to work when I got to the patch of trees. It was as dark as could be. The nearest streetlight was well over, I don't know, a football field's length away. The only thing lighting my path was the full moon. The area where I crossed was swampy. It's always standing water. Being winter, the water on my left was frozen over. I was about halfway through the patch of woods when my skin began to crawl in earnest, and I heard a sharp crack from the ice to my left. Anyone who's ever made the mistake of walking over ice that, you know, wasn't solid enough to support their weight, you know the sound of a foot breaking through the ice. That was the exact sound that I heard. I froze mid-step, worried that, I don't know, some sort of animal was out there. I turned to look at the source of the sound, and I saw this black figure looking at me from around 20 feet away. Even now, so many years removed from the experience, it gives me goosebumps. I knew instantly that this was neither a wild animal nor a living person. I could make out the trees behind it. It wasn't really see-through, but kind of transparent. It's difficult to articulate exactly, but it lacked any real form. Its head was shaped like a person, but it had no arms or legs that I could see. As I stood there, glued in place, it started to move towards me. Well, that's all it took to break me from the spot, and I sprinted towards the store faster than I have ever run before or since. The snow was about 8 inches deep in that field, but I'm convinced I could have set an Olympic record at the rate I was going. I got to the main road and crossed it to the store. Stood outside for a moment before catching my breath. The entire 2 hours I worked, I would get chills so intense that my eyes would water. At 9, when the store closed and I was to head home, I just stood by the edge of the road, you know, to gather my courage and test that route through the fields. I had to see if it was real or if I just imagined something. Finally, I crossed the road and entered the field. As I got closer to the patch of trees, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I knew I was not alone. I broke into a sprint again, feeling like I was running for my life. If there was something waiting for me, I never saw it. For the next few weeks, every time I would take that shortcut at night, I'd get that same sensation. Eventually, I caved and started to take the long way. This spirit, ghost, demon, whatever it was, stayed with me until I graduated high school and moved away from home. It followed me when I left, though. While hiking in the Alps on an exchange trip to France, I saw it in the mountain snow. My host family's son saw it too, only confirming what I already knew. This thing, whatever it was real. And it was with me for the long haul.
Our next story is told by Paul Brown. In this house, when the spirit is willing, your flesh is weak.
So, in 1999, my first wife had taken a job down in Lebanon, New Hampshire, as the DJ for a local country music station. So, we moved down from Maine. We rented an apartment in a house out in the country, which was built in 1826. Yeah. An old two-story home that had been converted into a multi-family place. We originally had rented the small one-bedroom on the side of the house. But when the larger apartment opened a couple years later, we went ahead and took it. It was a huge apartment, easily twice the size of the other home in this building. People who had lived there before us had told us the place was haunted. And usually a place being haunted makes it a bad spot to live. But actually, I was excited about this. The haunts were real, too. I had seen people literally come running out of the house scared. We believe the ghost to be the original owner, a woman named Helen. Her and her brother had lived there apparently until their death. They were buried just up the road in a small cemetery. I had asked the previous tenants what had happened, and they said the TV and the stereo would just turn on by themselves, followed by the volume on the stereo being turned like all the way up. And it was this time when we found out that my wife had stage 4 breast cancer. Yeah, so we had a lot of doctor's appointments, you know, around this time. Early one morning, before a handful of errands and appointments, I had my first of many run-ins with Helen. My wife, she liked all the doors closed, you know, for her own reasons, so I was going around shutting all the doors while she waited for me, you know, in the truck this one time. And the doors in the apartment had those really old latches, you know, where you had to press down on the handle to unlatch the door and then open it. So as I'm going around the house relatching doors and closing them, I heard the latch to the bedroom, followed by the door opening. Yeah, so, I mean, at this point, all the hair on my body stood up. Then I hear the latch on the bathroom and the door open. At this point, I was standing in the kitchen where I had just closed the door to the dining room. This door was old and warped, so to close it, you had to lift the latch and give it a good kick, you know, to close it. As I'm standing there, I physically see the latch jiggling. Yeah. So I say out loud, "Come on, you know, just let's see you try to open this door." You know, since I knew it had to be kicked pretty hard. First, the handle jiggled some more. And then the door flew open, hitting the wall. And I was like, "Holy shit, do that again. That was so cool." You know, I'm thinking I might have shocked Helen. She was probably, you know, just trying to scare us, but I found it to be just so interesting. As time went on, we started to hear footsteps. Sometimes I would hear her whisper my name, like right next to me. And the bed would shake as I was trying to sleep. It was like someone walking up to your bed and then shoving it really hard, you know, two or three times. It was just wild. And the basement was so creepy too. I mean, I never went down there. So my wife, she passed away from her cancer a couple years later. And I was in the apartment alone after that. People would stay with me from time to time, you know, making sure I would be okay. And one of my friends I used to work with, actually named Marla, was staying with me for an evening, and she was a smoker. And I had gone to bed before her late one night, but when I woke up, she was nowhere to be found. You know, I'm looking around, I'm like, what the heck? So on the kitchen table, I found a note that she had left for me. And it read, "I went outside at 2 a.m. to have a smoke. I was sitting on the steps when a woman in a nightgown came up the driveway, turned, came up the stairs passing me before going into your apartment." Helen had freaked her out, which was definitely not unusual for her. She liked to mess with people just to let them know she was around, I think, you know? Helen was just, she was very active. But honestly, I mean, I didn't mind. I don't know why. When I finally moved out, it was almost too much to bear. I had so many emotions, you know, just wrapped up in that place. I said goodbye to Helen in my own way, you know, and I thanked her for watching over me. And I actually even walked up to her grave and placed a rose there before I left.
You're listening to Disturbed. We'll be right back.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes, I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an Evergreen Podcasts, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.
Ever heard of stoicism? Chances are, if you have, you've heard of stoicism with a lowercase s and not stoicism with an uppercase s. Lone wolves, no emotions, antisocial behavior, cold indifference. All that is Stoicism with a lowercase s. Stoicism with an uppercase s is the ancient Greek philosophy and virtue ethics framework that centers on service to the cosmopolis, to include your family, friends, community, and planet, and the development of a good moral character. My name is Tanner Campbell, and I'm the host of Practical Stoicism, a 3 times a week podcast teaching Stoic principles and concepts to anyone interested through the exploration of texts and deep dives into various moral topics. You can find Practical Stoicism where you're already listening to podcasts by searching for Practical Stoicism or by going to stoicismpod.com. I invite you to give it a listen today. You just might like it.
Welcome back to the podcast. Our next story is from Wolfric Jaeger about a haunted bar in Montana, narrated by Adam Alderson.
So my family used to own a small restaurant/bar in Sims, Montana. And it was the main draw of the whole town because it was one of the first things you saw going down the highway. It and a gas station. And obviously seeing a restaurant on a long drive was appealing. The fireside passed through many hands while I lived in that town, so it was exciting at the age of 7 to learn from my grandmother that she had bought it from the previous owner and that the whole family would be moving in. So I need to explain the layout of the place so you can understand where things happened. When you walk through the front door, you have the restaurant to your left and the bar to your right. At the front of the restaurant half was a counter to give your order. Behind that and the bar was the kitchen and freezer, and past that was the house section where my whole family lived. Lastly, to the left of the counter was a more fancy dining room with red carpet and wooden chairs with soft red padding on them. In total, there were 3 ghosts in the fireside. I say 3, but only 2 of them were ghosts, and the last one was something else. I'll speak about each one and the encounters I and my family had separately. The first ghost was always at the end of the bar and would randomly show up and disappear. Even some customers saw him. He wasn't creepy or frightening, but was rather very friendly. I remember one time I was walking around and saw him out of the corner of my eye. He looked up at me, smiled, and vanished. He appeared to be a farmhand, given his attire with work boots, a denim jacket, pants, and a hat. He was also rather old, with a long gray beard. We don't think he died there, but that he resides there because it was a place he enjoyed in life. I don't have many stories about this ghost, because really all he did was sit at the end of the bar, but he was a welcome presence. The second ghost was an older woman, always in the kitchen and behind the bar. She was very kindly and sweet, dressed in an outfit that seemed to place her from the 1840s time period. I remember several encounters. Once I was in the kitchen being a dumb kid, running around and nearly tripped, but a hand caught me and placed me back on my feet. Turning around, I saw a glimpse of her smiling at me, and me being a kid, I smiled back at her even though I couldn't see her anymore. I also remember saying thank you. Another encounter was one my grandmother had. She was in the kitchen cooking something and washing the dishes. She had a pot on the stove when suddenly, while looking to her left, she saw the woman looking at the stove and said, "It's going to burn, love." To which my grandmother turned to the stove and saw indeed it was beginning to burn. She quickly removed it from the hot top and turned off the stove. Upon looking back at the woman, she was gone. I enjoyed having her around, and my family definitely agreed she was very sweet. But my father said one time he swore she had put saffron on the counter next to him while he was cooking, and no one tells him how to cook. The last thing was in the fancy dining room in the far left corner. Unlike the other two, it moved wherever it wished, and we all hated that damn thing. My mother would not go into the dining room by herself because it scared the hell out of her. It just sat there sometimes in the perfect spot where no light reached. We would always pray that it just didn't look at us because even that was just too much. One encounter I had was when my little brother and I were in the dining room playing the Pac-Man game that was in there. My brother began pulling on my shirt. I thought he just wanted his turn, but I was so close to winning. When he spoke, I could tell he was scared. I turned around and saw that thing rocking back and forth in the chair it sat in, not looking at us. I quickly grabbed my brother's hand and ran out of the room. Another time I was in my room late at night. I'd woken up in the middle of the night and got the feeling that something was looking at me. So I looked up at my door, and standing in the doorway was that thing. It was somehow so dark that the darkness around it seemed so much lighter. And then it looked up at me. Its eyes were pale white, and the feeling I got made me want to puke. I quickly hid under the covers and somehow managed to fall back asleep. My grandmother had an encounter with it once. She didn't see it, but when she was in the area right in front of the bar mopping up, she was pushed to the ground. When she looked up, there was nothing there. The most passive encounter with it was my mom and dad. They were sitting at one of the regular tables in the main restaurant area after my birthday party when my mom saw one of the balloons moving. When she pointed it out to my dad, he saw it too. The balloon soon did a full lap from the counter to the dining room, back to the counter. And that was it. Not sure how to describe it because it never really looked the same. Even when you were looking at it, its form changed, but it was always just a black silhouette, constantly changing like a wound in existence. Some may say demon, but my grandmother and I don't buy it. That thing wasn't human, but it didn't seem like a demon either. A demon would feel evil. This thing felt empty. Like it was hostile towards us, but it wasn't evil, it just had no good or evil intent. We would eventually move out after my sister was born. We just didn't have the money to maintain the fireside. And then we would move out of Sims after that. Thanks for stopping by and listening to me.
Our final story is narrated by Brandon Alexander Smith from r/glitch-in-the-matrix about a mysterious disappearing heckler.
My husband and I were walking our dog in a very busy and large urban park. Some background. We have lived in large cities our entire lives and are very used to and accustomed to being surrounded by a lot of different types of people and situations, generally. In short, it takes a lot for something to faze us. One day we were walking along a busy path in this large city park with a lot of people around, and we had our dog. This man walking towards us starts making eye contact with both of us almost immediately and stops next to us and says, "Hey, boss, how's it going?" And he puts his hand out to shake our hands. We look at him because he's acting like he knows us, and so we're a bit embarrassed and trying to remember who he is. We hesitate, and then all of a sudden he says, "Why are you stalking me? I keep seeing you guys. Why are you following me?" And he says it once or twice more as we quickly walk away from him. We walk past him and he walks past us, going opposite directions. We make it a point to wait exactly 5 seconds. I actually count to myself. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Before I look back to make sure he did indeed go away and isn't following us, my logic was I wanted to ignore him in case he was dangerous and sort of defuse it. But I also wanted to make sure he wasn't following us as he started to get a bit aggressive in his tone. I turn around and he is nowhere to be seen. I mean, literally nowhere. I can't exactly describe the area, but it was pretty open. And even if he sprinted in any direction for 5 seconds, like super fast, you still would have seen him at least somewhere. It was also open, and there weren't really trees or things he could hide behind. I'm sure you may be reading this thinking he was just a crazy on the street that could be found in any city. But here's what we found really jarring. Maybe not even everything separately, but put together, the first thing was he was dressed extremely well. Yes, I know that those with mental illness and or those living on the street can look quite presentable, and I'm not trying to be rude, but he looked wealthy, like old money wealthy, super preppy, well-dressed Trump type, like mid-50s, really tall, 6'6". And people have screamed at us before on the street and have never looked this put together. Again, it's not impossible, just a bit odd. And the second thing was he was so sure in his conviction that he knew us and we were stalking him. The look in his eyes was terrifying. I can't exactly describe it, but he seemed just so sure. We have no idea who he was. No one looked at what was going on, which by itself wasn't odd, but people in my city ignore people shouting and antics all the time without a care in the world, for better or worse. But when I tell you everyone around didn't even glance in our direction, people may ignore what's going on typically, but they usually walk the other way, not right into what's going on. Moreover, plenty of dogs within sight didn't even seem to look at this man screaming. The fourth thing was he had a very bizarre, surprising accent. Again, it's not by itself odd, but adds to the weirdness. I believe it was a maybe Russian? Fifth thing was he completely vanished. Both me and my husband turned around after 5 seconds and agree he was nowhere to be found and there was nowhere logically for him to be found. We also realized somewhat after the fact that he also appeared seemingly out of nowhere when he was walking toward us. Anyway, this was so odd. It's like he appeared out of nowhere from a different time and was so sure of his conviction to the point where we were both like, was he at the coffee shop we went to earlier? Did we indeed walk the same way to the park? But that doesn't make sense because he was walking toward us. It's really hard to describe over text, but apparently as quickly as he left and no one around us seemed even remotely bothered. We've had people on the street chase us, threaten us at knife point, throw bottles at us. We've been called homophobic slurs multiple times. But quite frankly, this was just as freaky, if not scarier than all of those, because I can't come up with an explanation, especially for the vanishing. My husband is a completely science guy and believes in absolutely nothing paranormal or anything that isn't evidence-based. And he's sort of my skeptical pulse for things. But I can tell even he was completely thrown off.
I'm your host, Doug Bailey, and this has been Disturbed, a production of Killer Podcasts and part of the Evergreen Network. For more paranormal and true crime shows, visit killerpodcasts.com. Follow our social channels at Disturbed Podcast on Instagram or Disturbed_pod on Twitter. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing and reviewing on your favorite listening platform. Share your own true horror story at DisturbedPodcast.com. Music by Epidemic Sound and by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Our producers are Noah Fouts and Elizabeth Flood. Our audio engineer is Nathan Corson. Executive producers Bridget Coyne and Gerardo Orlando. Until next time, stay safe out there.